Live from the Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday, Cofield and Company. Alex White is here, Alexandra White. Justin Watkins coming up in just a little bit. He'll be in the 4 o'clock hour. This is his place. We get into a little bit of legal. It was a pretty vicious fight at the Rams-Texans game, so I wanted to see what the legal ramifications are of that one. And then we do picks on Wednesdays, so we'll get into potentially lock in our five-play card for any NFL contest you have five plays in. A lot of college football today. Alex White, of course, a multiple-time champion of last woman standing contest. She's in the Circa Invitational, middle of the show. We'll have an update on the her week one picks in the Circa Invitational. NFL coming out of the gates. First of all, Griffin, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. You know, just another day, another fun time here at Lotus and ESPN Las Vegas.
There you go. Alex, I was rude. Ladies first.
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Are we good, Griffin?
We are definitely good.
Good. Just making sure. I'll tell you, the talking heads of the sports world, they're good because they're doing what they do every year. And this is a week that I will try to make some recreational bets with people because of the week one overreaction. I had someone tell me Dolphins win total 3.5. And I was like, will you do that right now? And the person said back to me, no, you always beat me on these bets. And I was like, well, you set the number. And I think I would have gone up to 6.5 and still played the over. So that's one of my takes on overreaction, because there are a lot of people out there who are like, the Dolphins are the worst team in the NFL. We can get to that one. But I'll give you the biggest overreaction I think right now is happening because of injuries. It just came down a little while ago that, you know, the Niners are kind of beat to hell. We know about George Kittle and the fact that he's on IR. He's going to be down 4 weeks. Purdy questionable yesterday and right after the game. Toe and shoulder injury. Little Shanny, Kyle Shanahan, comes out and says, absolute long shot. This is today. Absolute long shot that Brock Purdy's going to play on Sunday against the Saints. And whoo, how about the line?
Line has moved. But
what is it now?
It is 3.
3?
Niners 3. But it was already kind of factored in that Brock Purdy wasn't going to be 100% when it dropped down to 4.5. All the way down to 3. What's funny is the overreaction going into the year was the Saints are going to be an all-time worst NFL team we've ever seen. And then they look competitive against the Cardinals. And now all of a sudden, people are jumping in on that side.
So where's the overreaction? Too much respect for the Saints or too little respect for the rest of the Niners and Mac Jones?
Too little respect for the rest of the Niners and Mac Jones and Shanahan and Robert Saleh and the staff that they have there. So, yeah. Get in the Niners 3.
I mean, this is we're coming on the air with a public take, right? Aren't most people going to look at this, even with Purdy hurt, and go, Niners only 3?
Yeah.
So I don't want to play like a hot public bet, but I'm probably going to have to if this is locked in at 3 in all of these contests. It's just principle. Wins are one thing. Playing the right side. It'll be a right side loss if they don't cover this. They don't win this game.
That's right.
Won't do a damn thing for me in these contests. Right? Is that what you do when you lose in a contest? You're like, right side loss! I want a half a point.
Yes, actually, SMU this past weekend. I was like, that was the right side. If you missed that game, they were...
What'd they give you?
For SMU?
Yeah.
No, nothing.
What'd they give you?
You get nothing.
Zippo. Yeah. Here's a bag, and then you open it up, moths fly out. Yeah. There might have been money in there years ago, but you don't get money. All right, so right now we're thinking Niners against the Saints.
Oh, wow, it's dropping.
Are we seeing 2.5s?
I think there's 2.5.
Come on, mama. Let's go.
I gotta...
Now, did the Saints look, we'll say, better than expected or good?
That's tough.
Or is that a Cardinals issue?
I don't, that's...
Flip side, the Cardinals also had a Kyler Murray who was kind of dinged up. He went on the injury report morning of the game with a sickness. So
that's tough. I really didn't have the Saints as being like the worst ever. I know we didn't see great stuff from Spencer Rattler last year, but definitely looked better on Sunday. So that's an improvement. Looked more comfortable out there. Still made some bad decisions, but yeah, I don't know. I guess people are thinking, oh, they looked better than expected, right? A lot better than expected if people had them as number 32 in the league.
I will give you an overreaction. We're doing week one NFL overreactions, and I do believe that this is one of the juiciest weeks to bet. Do you have that attitude going into this week with the NFL? Generally in week two, where you're like, okay, there's going to be the public is going to go gaga on teams that did really well and teams that did poorly, they'll play against them.
I'd say week two and week three, right? I remember last year, I don't remember who the Saints had week three, but I was so ready to bet the other side after
Saints were 2-0.
We saw 2-0, best yeah. thing we saw on turf with
Super Bowl number was dropping.
That's right. So
didn't work out. Okay, I'll give you the AFC story that I think there's an overreaction. I think the Bills are really good and their schedule does appear to stink. But that was a nip and tuck game and they got dominated for 3+ quarters. So on future boards to automatically, and I brought up the topic yesterday about and Monday about, hey, can the Ravens win a big game against the other big quarterbacks, right? John Harbaugh's got to change his attitude on fourth downs. Now, I didn't realize when I was saying on the 4th and 2 or 3 that they didn't go for, Lamar Jackson said maybe a little calf tightness or hammy tightness, something was going on. So that's why they didn't go for it. But he doesn't have to run the ball.
No.
But they need to be more aggressive. I didn't realize that Harbaugh's numbers. Because he goes, you know, he goes for 2 a lot, which I love. Like, you know, whatever it is, the card or, I mean, I would go for 2 every friggin' time. I don't understand extra points. I don't understand risking. I know the percentage is still high with a 37-yard field goal. But Harbaugh does have a penchant for going forward for 2. And also, many times on the road, if he has a chance to get a win and get the hell out of there, not, you know, not go to overtime, he'll take it. And it backfired on him 2 years ago multiple times, even though it was the right decision. So I think he's got to be more aggressive. He's got ultimate weapons on offense. You can't, no matter how good your defense is, you can't rely on your defense to stop Josh Allen. But I will say on the other side, the Bills are very good. We're going to see what their defense looks like because they got smashed.
Yes.
They could not stop the run, and that's a great running team, but they could not stop the run. They do have some weaknesses on the back end because of injuries. And I heard one talking head this morning say that the Bills feel pretty good because they have to, as long as they shore up other areas and all their heartbreaking losses over the years, it's never been Josh Allen. No one's ever gotten on Josh Allen. And I was like, the AFC title game last year, I mean, I think there was a split, but there were a lot of people who were like, Josh Allen read that play like crap. Didn't read it correctly. Now, I wasn't on that side. I was kind of down the middle. But let's not act like Josh Allen has always been perfect, that he's never fallen short in a big game. They haven't beaten the Chiefs when it's counted the most. And it's not always the defense's fault. I mean, the love fest right now with Josh Allen. We talked about it yesterday. Chris Collinsworth, and I love Collinsworth, and I think him going gaga about players. But he does get just wackadoo.
Josh Allen won the MVP last year, and I do think it was deserved. You could debate if you thought it was Lamar Jackson again, but that was his first MVP. The year before that, it was a turnover problem, and that's kind of why his numbers looked so good last year, right? Because no, the interceptions dropped dramatically. They figured out their offense. They went to the run game. They used James Cook. So, I mean, this is kind of, I mean, the best version of him, but you're right. It has definitely fallen on him before.
Another overreaction. If the Lions go 0-2, they have no way to make the Super Bowl. They've also dropped significantly on not the Super Bowl, but what are the odds now for the Lions to make the playoffs after they lost 27-13 to the Packers?
Yes, I was looking at one of my apps this morning, and I saw even money for the yes for the Lions to make the playoffs. The no was -130.
I mean, that's nuts.
Huge overreaction.
Do you jump on stuff like that?
I have not yet, but I did say, you know, if they crush the Bears this weekend, you're not getting that again.
No.
Even though they do have to go to Baltimore in week 3, that's not going to be easy. But yeah, I don't think he'll get even money. He'll be laying a price again.
Did you watch a lot of the Lions and Packers game?
I didn't watch too much of the Lions-Packers game.
There were some turning point moments in the game. Some key drops on the Lions side. There was a key drop on the defensive side for the Lions. Eddie Anzalone dropped a freaking easy interception.
Saw that
one. Could change the game. So there's little things in the game. They weren't that uncompetitive. And the other overreaction is there's already talk about, hey, is this Morton guy going to survive as OC? It's one friggin' game.
I wish I had the number. Dan Campbell's record off a loss is crazy. Like, I don't know if it's since that turnaround with the Lions and when they got Jared Goff and they had that bad stretch and then turned it around. But, yeah, they don't really lose two in a row. So we'll see. I think they'll be ready for Ben Johnson and company.
Number I had as of an hour ago was Detroit minus 5.5 against the Bears. Is that where it's hitting? Because I have a feeling this is going to steam down some. Because the chatter about the Lions being ordinary without Ben Johnson is going to continue the whole narrative of two coordinators gone. What's going to happen to this offense? Jahmyr Gibbs had 10 catches, 31 yards. Vanilla offense. They're just throwing side to side. They're not going to stretch the field. Goff is lost without Ben Johnson.
I'm going the other way. I'm seeing open 5.5. We're seeing sixes.
And wow.
Okay, so San Francisco is still 3. I might have been on first half from baseball earlier, right. But yeah. All right.
So most lopsided bets this weekend. Go ahead.
6 and 6.5 now at FanDuel. So
all right,
might be going your way.
And I guess people are well. I don't want it to go there. I'd like to lay with Detroit. I'd like it to go down. Most lopsided games this weekend, NFL in terms of betting. This is just tickets. Cardinals 93% of the tickets against the Panthers. Ravens, 90% of the tickets against the Browns. Cowboys, 85% of the tickets against the Giants. And that number has shot up.
Ooh. That one's
where do you have the confidence to go? I'm not going to overreact to the Panthers looking, you know, not great. I thought the Browns looked fine, not offensively, but their defense looked good.
Agreed.
And I'm not a panic guy on the Giants. I thought the Giants would be over 5.5 this year. I'm going to stick with them. I'm not worried that Russell Wilson is playing and Jackson Dart isn't. If they deem Dart's not ready and there's a reason Russ was named the starter, I'm fine on the Giants. That could be one of my plays, Giants plus 6.
That's my favorite of the three overreactions. Just what you said. I think that game had a lot more to do with the Commanders than it did the Giants. I just think Washington did what they had to do for a team that kind of came out of nowhere, right? They made the offseason changes and additions and came back better and surprised even the Giants there. So I think that, and then on the flip side, Cowboys looked way better than expected, right? Against the Eagles, covered easily.
Weird
and
game though.
Weird game.
Everything hit a wall with a long delay.
Correct.
Jalen Carter took himself out of the game.
That too.
Well, all these picks, we're all heading towards another weekend of live weekend shows with ESPN Las Vegas. Two of them are at Westgate on Saturday and Sunday. There's DVT's Saturday football preview show, Westgate, 8 a.m. start. There's the Sunday football preview show. I'll be hosting that this week at the Westgate in the Superbook. Remember, dollar beers in the Superbook for Monday night and Thursday night football. So we got a good TNF game going down tomorrow with the Commies and the Packers. If you go and get a new Westgate Superbook mobile app, you get a free bucket of beer. They're really big on beer down there, which I'm really big on beer, so thank you so much. And Football Central is back on Sundays. Opens up at 9 a.m. You got the smoke-free International Theater. Bucket specials plus food like this. Bacon, egg, and cheese in the morning. Sausage, egg, and cheese. Breakfast burrito. Chicken chipotle nachos. You got the pretzel. You got the chips and salsa and street tacos if you want chicken tinga or beef birria. Booth specials. VIP pod specials. Follow them on social media at Superbook NV. Get on down on Saturday and Sunday, and really all week long. You heard about the dollar beer specials on Monday and Thursday. It's the Westgate for football all season.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
Picks. Wednesday's big picks day here on Cofield and Company because Alex White is in from South Point Studios. She does the show with Jeff Parles. How's Parles doing so far with his football picks?
Good.
to be better than Brett McMurphy. I saw that you and McMurphy went head to head on, what was your best bet?
My best bet was Boston College. Was his Michigan State?
I don't know if his best bet was. He picked Michigan State, though.
Okay.
Not that I comb through his and your picks specifically every week, but I might have.
I was a lone ranger on Circa Invitational at Boston College. I think I literally was the only one, which I was kind of surprised.
You were not the lone ranger on Duke and Illinois.
I was not.
There were a lot of people who liked Illinois. I checked out Duke and...
Yeah.
Man.
I think 5 turnovers for the Blue Devils in that one. So I'm going to be right back on Duke this weekend.
UNLV has an off week. We were just talking about overreactions. Brew Crew, Ray Brewer, down at the Las Vegas Sun, who knows like a little bit about sports. Just a little bit. Not enough to be having conversations like this. To view this, Griffin, as an overreaction, Brew Crew said that everyone better root against South Florida this weekend because that is the top competition for UNLV to make it pass to get to the CFP as the Group of Six rep.
I mean, again, we're only in college football week 3. There's still a lot that could happen down the line. UCF is off to a great start, but I wouldn't necessarily say they are the lone roadblock in the way of UNLV region.
By the way, USF, South Florida.
USF, my apologies.
Yeah,
South Florida's have a great start of the year, and they are facing Miami this week, so that's going to be a big opponent for them. But I mean, if South Florida ends up losing to Miami, it's like, okay, then what is the big roadblock now, since it was as easy as them just getting their first loss of the year for UNLV to get over that hurdle?
I think, listen, if they get a win against Miami and they have a win against Florida, then they are in the driver's seat. So I kind of get what he's saying. That said, I don't believe that South Florida is going to race through their conference unbeaten. And those games are really important because they'll get dinged pretty heavily if they have more than one loss in their conference. This race, so South Florida's definitely, they've opened some eyes. And I don't think you had it in the notes. The other thing to keep in mind is that what if Boise does finish first or second, makes the title game.
Right.
And South Florida smushed them to open the season. So, okay, I take it back. He knows a little bit about sports. He's got a case here. But here's the thing. There's so much competition for the CFP Group of Six bid. I don't have the Group of Six odds specifically. I don't know if you can find that at some point in the show. I pulled the William Hill odds for CFP playoffs overall and then found all the Group of Six teams. I'm a hard worker like that. South Florida right now is the favorite at plus 270 to make the college football playoff. Tulane is next at plus 450. Tulane's intriguing, although guess what? This weekend was not easy.
No, it wasn't.
But they got a good win in the opening game, and then John Sumrall, I think that's his first name, it's not Pat, crapped all over Northwestern because they wouldn't let Tulane wear the uniforms that were like 20-year anniversary uniforms of Katrina, and he's like, you come down to New Orleans, that's what's going to happen to you. Okay. Tulane's schedule coming up has some good opportunities out of conference. They play Ole Miss or Mississippi State. We'll look that up. I know they play one of them, so there's a chance there. Mississippi State, you know what? You beat Mississippi State. I'm pretty sure it's Ole Miss. Mississippi State now, they have a quality one on the board, so getting a win against Mississippi State. Beyond that, Boise's still 6-1. Well, not still. They were the favorite. They're 6-1. Memphis is 8-1, so we're talking about teams in the same conference there. Not Boise, but Memphis and Tulane. Navy is 9-1. James Madison, 10-1. Now they have to run the table because they played competitively in their Friday night game last week, but wound up losing, I think, by 14. UNLV is 11-1. So the premise, I guess, you do have to root against South Florida getting the win against Miami, but there's a lot to jump over for UNLV. He also mentioned that, man, that Idaho State game at the beginning of the season where they only won 38-31, that could really be the difference. I don't believe that.
I don't either.
I am. Griffin, you've heard me talk to Rich Clark, right? The head of the College Football Playoff Committee. Air Force General. We're tight. We're tight like this. I know this man. I know he would not overreact to a close game against Idaho State. He's familiar with the region. He knows Idaho State can be pretty good, although week 2 for Idaho State was terrible. They got mauled by Southern Utah and actually couldn't run the ball after running for 160 against the Rebels. So, yeah, beyond that, Army. But now Army's got a quality win, but then a weird loss with Tarleton State. Army took out Iowa State over the weekend. Texas State. Did I get that right, Army? And I'm doing this off a lot of memory. I should know all the results of last week. UTSA is 20-1. Ohio is 25. They have a big game this week. If they can actually play Ohio State close, that might mean something. Although they couldn't get past my Scarlet Knights. Air Force, I think, is very, very live in the Mountain West. There are some people down on them. Others are like, hey, they're going to be back. They're 35, and then Liberty's 50-1.
Just making sure. You said Army, big win over Kansas State.
Kansas State. I said Iowa State. So Kansas State, yep.
Yeah, it's a huge win, really.
Yeah.
And that's kind of makes up for the Tarleton State Friday game. Yeah.
But Army's going to be dangerous. Navy's going to be dangerous. I mean, this list of schools is there. I mean, every – the problem is there's so many playing in the same conference
right.
that you figure there's going to be some cannibalizing. And that's what happened last year.
And that's why Boise –
the Conference USA – not Conference USA. The American really got each other down a stretch.
I agree. Yeah. And I like those teams because, I mean, nobody really talks about Memphis either. And I think if Memphis can win the American, they're right in there with those other two, Tulane and – USF, but Tulane actually has Duke this weekend when I said I'd probably be on Duke this weekend. So that's going to be a tough matchup for them. I agree with them with South Florida, though. I mean, if they were to pull off this upset.
It's pretty big.
That's pretty big.
But I'm sorry. I'd love to see UNLV make the college football playoff, but I root for college football Armageddon because I don't know what's going to happen the rest of the way. I am 100% rooting for South Florida to take out Miami.
I mean,
I think it would be so awesome.
17-point underdog, and now Miami knows they're coming, right? Yeah. I mean, it was like, okay, the spot, Boise traveling, game, but then to go to Florida and beat them, and really by their defense, because, I mean, that was a really low-scoring, tough, tight game all the way to the end.
Their quarterback was suspended in their first half, and they beat him. So now he's going to be back for the whole game. Yeah, I got to see Miami's defense be dominant again. I won't lay the points here. And I don't know what you have in front of you, but I thought it went from 17.5 down to 16.5. Maybe it did. Maybe it's 17. But I wouldn't lay it.
No. That's a lot of points.
There's still some unknowns. I really like Carson Beck, and he kind of did look like he was back to his form of a couple years ago. And their defense does look dominant on the defensive line. Their edges are good. But I will point out, and I'm sure it's being drilled, but what kids do on the field is what kids do on the field. When you've, and Griffin, we talked about this the other day, when you've got great edges and they're used to being able to pin their ears back and go after quarterbacks. And, you know, last week against Florida, they had to respect, you know, Florida's quarterback. But if they're, not that Carson, I'm sorry, I'm getting it wrong. Now, Brown is a run threat. So my whole point is, like, play disciplined football. On the Miami side, contain on the edges, and they'll be fine. If they're getting sucked inside, then there's going to be trouble. Brown could freaking run for a lot of daylight on them.
And you look at Miami's defensive line, Steve, especially in that game, that first game against Notre Dame, stout group. That is a stout group on that D-line. The additions they had, the performance they had against Notre Dame, and really just sticking in there, especially in a tight game. So I like Miami's D-line. I think they are they're going to feast this Saturday. They're at least going to attempt.
And they were never made to be honest because for some reason Notre Dame didn't run the ball. So if you run the ball and you're gashing about the middle, then obviously you know your ends can't be crashing down, crashing in to go into the quarterback. USC is taking on Purdue. So this has some local interest.
Yes.
Jade Maiava and UST going to face Barry Odom and Purdue. Purdue's off to a good start. Purdue's got, I think, 8 players from UNLV that they grabbed, and 7 are playing. They're 2-0. Solid, not spectacular. USC, spectacular, but not against, A-level opponents. Maiava's off to a great start. He's throwing to the tune of 74% completion, 6 touchdowns, and that's in some abbreviated action because they've been such big blowouts, 707 yards. So the angle here is, one, how well does the defensive coordinator who was here, was around Maiava for the 1 year that he and Odom, the Odoms, were together, how well does Michael Shear know Maiava? Do they know his weaknesses? Can they get him?
I think it's too many points. What's the number? That jumped out to me right away because Purdue is playing better, and I know it was a mess last year, and Barry Odom had a tall task, but I'm seeing 20.5, 20 down at Circa now, so.
I think that's a little high. Also very underrated is the Purdue home environment. They were terrible last year. And I'm not saying everyone showed up in whatever reported number was, because it was like 53,000 a game reported. I'm sure they had some no-shows as the season went along. But they show up to watch their Boilers. And with Odom there, they're going to be fired up. This is a big opponent.
Yes.
All the, you know, the high-level Big Ten or high-rep Big Ten teams are going to draw crowds. I mean, with a start like this, there's going to be a big crowd there. Not that Maiava hasn't. He played last year in the Big Ten, so he's played in front of big crowds. But I also think, I'll just tell you, I mean, I'm going to go deep divey here. There's going to be a little bit of extra Odom motivation. I don't know if this family thinks that way. But I got to tell you, my recollection of Maiava leaving was late 2023, I'm on a UNLV basketball trip because, you know, I do sidelines for the basketball, men's basketball and football. And we see the note that Jaden Maiava has entered the transfer portal. And you're like, ah, rough break.
Yeah.
Then Brad Odom, Barry's brother, who's in charge of kind of recruiting, and he sends out a picture with him and Maiava together on campus at the school like a day or two later. And it's like, oh, not true. There's really no confirmation from the Maiava side to my recollection. And then within a week, he was gone to Georgia. He committed to Georgia and then changed his mind 2 days later. And USC, I guess, outbid Georgia to get Maiava. So I don't know if, like, Brad Odom was like, he made me look bad. I took a picture with him and I vouched for him and he burned me. Bottom line is the Odoms are going to want to beat USC. They're going to certainly want to play competitive. And they may know some of the secrets of Jaden Maiava just in terms of, I would think the biggest thing would be finding ways to give him, we always talk about eye candy on offense, right? Trying to trick defenses. Flip it around, give him lots of looks on defense that makes it hard to read. Maybe Maiava makes some mistakes. He can throw interceptions. At times, and maybe he shored this up, he would carry the ball like a loaf of bread, kind of, you know, loose on RPOs. I don't think he's running a ton this year. But yeah, it's a good matchup. And there's some motivation certainly on both sides. I don't think Maiava's mad at Barry Odom, but on the Purdue side, there's a real sense of urgency here. And on the USC side, you know, they want to keep it rolling, and this would be a great blowout.
Two things. Are we still, we're still filling it out, right? With the old Pac-12 teams now moving over to the Big Ten and the travel spots because they were very tricky last year. And second thing is, didn't Ricky White have a statement come out for Jaden Maiava as well and say he's not staying? We're all in this together?
No. Was that the, no, that was, I think that was last year.
Okay.
With Sluka. I think it was with Sluka, and that both Jackson Woodard and Ricky White came out and said they had the back of Haj Malik Williams. But you might be right. I might be forgetting. Because remember, when he left? Yeah, when he left. That was, it was December and then early January.
I think it
was. So maybe they said something.
I thought it was. Yeah, just kind of like, we're all staying. No one's going in the in the portal.
So, they were committed to UNLV. There's not going to be a mass exodus.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll have to look into it, but 20.5, it'll be on my card.
I don't know if you're a bitter UNLV fan, who you're rooting for, which I don't understand the bitterness. Good for Jaden Maiava if he got a big payday. It worked out last year. I mean, Haj Malik was better than Jaden Maiava would have been or could have been, and Barry Odom left for $6 million when he was making 1.75.
I can't be bitter with Barry Odom because the last 2 years were awesome, and we haven't had that with UNLV football in quite some time. So whatever he did and what he built, and now if it can carry on. But, I mean, that was a tough task, right? And we're in a much better place. So, yeah. And to see the mess that he inherited there, and if he can, you know, keep this competitive or, you know, play tight against USC, it'd be very impressive. So I'm rooting for a good game here.
Remind me later. I saw some travel update details for USC, not just for this trip, but travel around the Big Ten. But I'll get that. Coming up next, let's talk about the Chiefs, because that's another overreaction. A lot of people think the Chiefs might be just an ordinary team in the AFC West. I don't think either one of us believes that, but I want to find out from Alex. And Travis Kelce was speaking about dude, I mean, he looks like he's in better shape, but what a lummox out there. He almost took out for the season one of the top players on the team, Xavier Worthy, who I think we'll have an update on that. I know we'll have an update on Worthy, but Kelce speaking on injuring one of his own players.
Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We got a lot of college football picks coming up. Leans, likes, stayaways, more UNLV breakdown. You were asking about USC and travel?
Yes.
So we were just talking about Jade Maiava and USC going against Barry Odom and Purdue. Yeah, I also wanted to mention, I think it's cool that Maiava's gotten off to a good start here. I don't know that the job is his for the entire year. Hassan Longstreet, a true freshman who was a top five quarterback in the country, in his limited playing time has looked more than capable. So I'm not saying that he's going to lose his job anytime soon, but it's something to track throughout the year. So according to one of the USC reporters, USC has made some changes to its travel plans to help adjust for the long Big Ten trips. Lincoln Riley says, including using a different type of airplane. Okay, I'd like to know that one. Different meal times and more of a focus on sleep. Now, that may sound really stupid, but I'm telling you, even at this level at UNLV, going back to the Odom era, their road trips were like they really concentrated on what they did on the road trips. And there is something to the arrival time. If you're going all the way to the East Coast from LA, if you're going to Maryland or Rutgers, do you leave 2 days in advance? Do you travel on a Thursday for a Saturday game? If you're going to Central, which they're going to go to a lot, in the case of Purdue, can we look that up? Lafayette or West Lafayette time zone? When do you leave on a Friday, the day before the game? And when do you want to be there? So on the sleep thing, there are some coaches who are like, hey, I want to get there, and I don't want to have like any distractions, so we're going to get there. It's going to be like six or seven at night. The kids are going to eat, and then they're getting in bed by like 9, and then there's also game time that matters. Is it a night game? Is it a 5, 6, 7 Eastern time game? Is it a freaking noon game? Now you're talking about like UNLV's got that challenge in 2 weeks. At Miami of Ohio, they've got noon Eastern time start, 9 a.m. here.
Right.
So that's going to alter their travel. I don't think their travel is set yet. So the sleep thing, I know it sounds like a basic, but there is a science to it.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. So it is Eastern time, West Lafayette time
zone. Okay. And we have the start time of the game?
Start time of the game.
Just looking for information left and right. Information left and right. Trying to process all this. So on the AFC West, we've been talking the last couple of days about how everyone feels after 1 week. I feel fine about the Chiefs. I'm not rooting for the Chiefs. What's the start time?
12:30.
Oh, okay.
Pacific time, yeah.
Oh, 12:30 Pacific. Okay, that's not too bad. But still, you know, I don't think you want to be getting there at freaking, you know, 6 or 7 at night Eastern time. I would try to be there by at least midday. I don't have their travel schedule. I don't feel bad about the Chiefs. I thought the Chargers played well. I thought the Chargers also had some really bad mistakes in the game. I think the Chiefs had some mistakes. Obviously, a lot led up to the biggest final play of the game was a 3rd-and-14, where the Chargers were able to get a 20-plus yard scramble by Justin Herbert because Chris Jones didn't play disciplined on the edge. But I didn't think the Chiefs looked terrible. Chargers had 2 busted coverages. I mean, just horrific throws they give up to Hollywood Brown when Mahomes is running for his life and he gets to chuck it down to like the 5-yard line. There was another one where I think 2 of the safeties miscommunicated and Kelce's wide open.
Right.
That's another thing. I think Kelce is in better shape. I think he is going to be a better impact player this year. His demise was kind of overrated last year. He still had 90 plus catches. He wasn't going, you know, he's like 8.9, 9.3 yards a catch. Maybe not as explosive. He's still dangerous. I think their run game is fine. Their O-line will be better. This kid Josh Simmons is going to work out. Their defense is going to be good. But little things like running a route and running into your freaking small speed receiver.
Yeah.
You can't do that. And Kelce actually owned up to it, right?
Yeah, he did. On the New Heights podcast, and there's an article on ESPN, I think other places too, but he just said basically that he's been in the league for 13 years and that's on him. I thought it was also interesting because he added that Worthy's one of their best players and he's going to take that big step and be one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League, which we've kind of been talking about. I mean, he has the speed, and if you have Patrick Mahomes thrown to you, but it'll be interesting. I'm not too concerned with their pass catchers either. I feel like Patrick Mahomes has done more with less, right. And they have two good tight ends. If they have Pacheco healthy and Kareem Hunt, I mean, did a pretty good job stepping in for him last year.
Yeah, Juju's fine. Rashee Rice is going to be back in, whatever, five more games. We'll go over our grades for the AFC West in just a couple minutes. But on the way back, we have an exclusive one-on-one with Willie Ramirez, who caught up with one of the guys in the big match this weekend. Bud Crawford talked to Willie ahead of his fight against Canelo.
Now, back to Cofield and Company. Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
Big fights on the way on Saturday at Allegiant Stadium. Canelo and Crawford. We've got lots of boxing guests coming in tomorrow on Cofield and Company, our Thursday show, and then again on Friday. Willie Ramirez, all over it, working in his gig with the AP, was over at the Fountain Blue just yesterday and got a one-on-one, very intimate one-on-one with Terrence Crawford, and started talking to Crawford, who was the smaller man, and was asking him, hey, you know, aside from getting the win, why is this fight so important for you to get?
Well, Terrence Crawford's legacy, you know, pre-Canelo fight, he's a Hall of Famer. First ballot, period. Terrence Crawford defeating Canelo Alvarez, he's one of the all-time greats.
When you reflect on your career, are there any regrets, personally, business-wise, anything you would have done differently?
Not at all. Nothing different. Everything that I've done was by choice, so I don't have no regrets.
You had a hardened life, obviously, growing up. Did that help mold you? Have you come to an appreciation of the sort of what you've gone through?
Yeah, for sure. You know, like I said, you know, all those hardships is what made the man that you see today.
What have you learned most about yourself through your career in these latter stages, and how have you matured?
Oh, man, I learned a lot about myself, you know, that I can overcome anything. And, you know, just the way I handle things in life is way different, you know, that I would have, you know, let's say 5-10 years ago.
As the build-up for this fight, but in the past and in the talks of it, did it ever bother you, like with PBC, Top Rank, other, you know, in that they tried to use you as a pawn at times, because you've always dictated how your career is going to go, but did that ever bother you, or did you?
Yeah, at times it bothered me, but, you know, what can you do? You know, you only can do what, you know, allowed to do. So, of course, some things bother me, but I couldn't control it, so I had to just keep doing what I was doing.
You've always dictated how your career would go. You've obviously made plenty of money. This has to be more than, as people are calling it, a cash grab. Why now to make the two weight classes? What's the defining factor or factors?
So who else would there be to make a mega fight with Terrence Crawford other than Canelo Alvarez? Nobody at 47, nobody at 54, nobody at 60. Who else besides Canelo Alvarez? When you sit down there and you think of a mega fight, not a good fight, a mega fight, you say, okay, what name could Terrence Crawford fight to generate a mega fight?
Is this a career-defining fight for Terrence Crawford or a career-defining fight for Canelo Alvarez?
Both. I think it's a career-defining fight for both of us. Canelo don't want to lose to a guy moving up two weight classes. You know, he don't want a smaller guy dethroning him from his undisputed status. Terrence Crawford want to move up and do all those things. So, you know, he got a lot to lose. I got a lot to win. I got a lot to lose. He got a lot to win. So.
Is this the pinnacle for Terrence Crawford, or what's there after this?
I don't know. One fight at a time. This is definitely the highest that you can go in the sport of boxing. It don't get no bigger than this.
Where would this victory rank in your mental trophy case?
Oh, the best. The best, the greatest of all the fights that I've ever fought. This is the one.
I know everybody's asking your prediction, and the prediction's a victory, but how have you strategized how you're going to break this fight down?
Just be myself. You know, I just think, you know, me being myself is the key. Like, don't try to be nobody else or try to, you know, do what other people was doing in the past and beat me.
This has obviously been the fight capital for many years. Outdoor stadiums at Caesars, the MGM. This is going to draw the biggest crowd, biggest stadium that's ever been in Las Vegas. Had a chance to just soak that in and embrace what that means for you.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's going to be great, especially looking back on it, for me to capture that victory, you know, and that magnitude, you know, it's going to be so good.
Terrence Crawford with Cofield and Company's Willie Ramirez. Look for Willie's story in the AP, an exclusive one-on-one there with Bud Crawford, who is the dog against Canelo, coming up on Saturday night. It's at Allegiant Stadium. Little bit earlier start, not way earlier. We thought initially that it was going to be a card that started in the afternoon, and the fight, the main event, might go at like 6 o'clock. It's slated to go about 8 o'clock. We'll see what the final numbers are at the stadium, if they can sell it out. I know they're looking for high dollars to get in, and obviously there'll be the secondary market, but I think there'll be a big crowd there. I did notice, I don't even know what you call it, but at Allegiant, kind of the lighting setup that would drop down to go over the ring.
Right.
So I looked up, and it was already there at Allegiant for the UNLV game, but I looked up, and I'm like, that's not normally there. And then someone's like, oh, yeah, that's for boxing. So, you know, they've been ready to go here for a couple of weeks, and it's going to be cool to see how they configure it and all the sight lines and screens, and it should be an awesome show. I'm sure it's going to be loud as hell in there. That stadium actually does get really loud, because even UNLV against UCLA, they had about 36, 37,000 in there. And, man, when it got loud, it got really loud. When the Raiders are doing well, it gets freaking loud. Unfortunately, when the Raiders play the Packers, the Bears, the Steelers, it gets really loud for the other team, sometimes the Dolphins. We'll have updates on the ticket situation for that game as well, coming up on Monday night with the Raiders and Chargers. So, South Point, what?
South Point has Canelo, $1.70 favorite. I was just looking. Looks like Westgate, if you do like the dog, with Crawford is the best number, plus 155. I know you've been excited about this fight since they announced it.
I might bet a stoppage. Why not?
Yeah.
It's more of a lottery ticket. If Canelo goes a little lower, I don't like. What'd you say the best number is? 150? Plus 150 on Crawford?
Plus 155.
I don't know if I like that.
Yeah.
It's a tough fight because you got a guy who's a little bit slicker, but in Crawford, Canelo's not an oaf. You know, he's a puncher, but he's also a pretty good boxer. So I don't think he's going to be totally schooled in this one. He's not old. He's actually the younger fighter. And we'll see if Crawford can hurt him, because he is much bigger. Yeah, he's pretty big. He's, you know, he's a guy who's toiled more, you know, 160, 168 of late. So he's definitely the bigger fighter. This hour is brought to you by Jackson's Bar and Grill, one of the top value steaks in Las Vegas. It's a great spot pre and post game for any event down on the strip. It's at Flamingo and Jones. 1 pound ribeye, $20. Garlic marinated bistro filet is $20. It's $20 for these awesome steaks, and they got you covered with all the other bar food you love. It's Jackson's Bar and Grill at 6020 West Flamingo, Flamingo and Jones.